For What's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beat here reporting. President Obama delays the drawdown of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. President Obama says the 9,800 U.S. troops still in Afghanistan will remain there until year's end, despite earlier plans to cut that number in half.
And this flexibility reflects our reinvigorated partnership with Afghanistan, which is aimed at making Afghanistan secure and preventing it from being used to launch terrorist attacks. Reconciliation and a political settlement remain the surest way to achieve the full drawdown of U.S. and foreign troops from Afghanistan in a way that safeguards international interests and peace in Afghanistan, as well as U.S. national security interests.
The president says the U.S. is determined to maintain the gains made by U.S. forces. Mr. Ghani says the delayed drawdown is significant.
The institutional gains that would be achieved through the train, advice, and assist role is what will guarantee that the investments of the last 14 years pay off.
Mr. Ghani addresses a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress Wednesday. Ahead of Saturday's election in Nigeria, police have ordered restrictions on movement with a total restriction of vehicles when the polls open. Meanwhile, election officials say more than 80% of voters have voting cards to present at polling stations. Adahiro Jega is head of the country's Electoral Commission.
The period for collection was extended by 4 weeks to March 8th, and the tremendous effort was made to improve collection by voters.
There were concerns millions would be unable to cast ballots in regions ravaged by the Islamist insurgency Boko Haram in the northeast. Jega says arrangements have been made outside Damoturu and Potiskum for all internally displaced people to be allowed to cast ballots. This is VOA News. Recovery efforts at the crash site of a German jetliner in the French Alps were suspended late Tuesday as night fell over mountainous terrain where officials say all 150 people on board were killed. Authorities say the German wing's Airbus A320 en route from Barcelona to Dusseldorf went down Tuesday morning following a slow descent from cruising altitude without issuing any distress signals. Scott Hamilton is an aviation consultant with the Seattle-based Liam Company.
That's a descent rate of about 3,000 or 4,000 feet a minute. It looked like it was actually a controlled descent from the radar tracking. Didn't look like it was an emergency descent. The real intriguing part about this is the fact that there was no radio communication or no transponder communication to indicate any kind of an emergency.
French authorities say a black box has been recovered at the crash site and is undergoing analysis in Paris. The UN Security Council Tuesday expressed profound disappointment with the failure of South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to finalize a peace agreement and threatened sanctions against senior individuals whom it deems responsible for actions or policies that threaten the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. Fighting in the oil-rich East African country has killed thousands and displaced millions. UN Children's Fund official Jonathan Veach says the scale of the humanitarian disaster is staggering.
More than 800,000 children are still displaced from their homes inside the country, and another 350,000 are living outside the country. With fighting flaring in different parts of the conflict area, there is little hope that this situation will change for the better.
The South Sudanese parliament, meanwhile, voted to extend President Salva Kiir's term in office 3 more years after peace talks ended and June elections were postponed. Parliament's tenure was also extended to give what a spokesman says is a chance for peace to conduct a census leading to free and fair elections. Yemen's Shia rebels made advances in southern Yemen Tuesday, clashing with rival militia loyal to the country's current president. The rebels, known as Houthis, entered the town of Al-Dalia. They're also fighting in Taiz province with forces loyal to ousted President Ali Abdullah Saleh. Moody's Investor Service cut Ukraine's credit rating to its second lowest level Tuesday, warning that creditors face deep losses in debt restructuring negotiations with bondholders. It said default on repayment of $40 billion in aid from the International Monetary Fund is virtually certain. The reopening of Tunisia's National Bardo Museum in Tunis has been delayed as security is boosted following last week's terrorist attack that killed 21 people, mostly foreign tourists. The French press agency reports plans Tuesday were changed at the last minute. Burkina Faso has begun an investigation into the 1987 assassination of former President Thomas Sankara. A family lawyer says the case of the popular Marxist revolutionary was being pursued by an official of a military tribunal. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. With just 2 days before Nigeria's presidential election, diaspora supporters of both candidates want to make their views known.
There is no single reason on earth for General Buhari to aspire to rule Nigeria.
He murdered democracy. How can he come back to further democracy again?
Honorable Ejike Nwankwo is a member of the Goodluck Jonathan Support Organization here in the United States. We also hear from supporters of General Buhari why they think he is the best candidate. Zimbabwe's finance minister says his country is committed to upholding the rule of law. And South Sudan rebels reject parliament's extension of President Salva Kiir's term to 2018.
It is actually illegal for this parliament to extend the term of the president to 3 years. It is a violation of the Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan, and we are calling on the people of South Sudan to reject this.
Ezekiel Lo Gatkuof is the deputy chairman for foreign affairs of the South Sudan Rebel Group. And we'll have a report on food insecurity in Somalia. The stories plus Mark Omar, sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerians in the diaspora are making their voices heard as their country prepares to elect a president this Saturday. The two candidates, President Goodluck Jonathan and his challenger General Muhammadu Buhari of the opposition All Progressive Congress Party, have their block of supporters in the United States. Dr. Okengwa Mwanso is national coordinator of the Goodluck Jonathan Support Organization. He and the Honorable Ejike Nwankwo, a former federal congressman, stopped by our Washington studio to tell Nigerians that they should re-elect President Goodluck Jonathan because General Buhari murdered democracy as a military leader of the country.
People have severally said, and you know that General Buhari has an unenviable track record of sacking the Second Republic democracy. That was about 30 years ago. What is he coming to do now?
What do you mean that General Buhari is not qualified?
This guy was a military autocrat who is so afraid of democracy that he had to destroy it in order to rule. What is he doing coming back 30 years later? What has changed between Buhari, the autocrat dictator of 1983, and the Buhari who wants to govern Nigeria as a civilian democrat?
The Honorable EJK Nwankwo, what do you have to say? Do you agree with that?
Let me tell you, frankly speaking, there is no single reason on earth for General Buhari to aspire to rule Nigeria. I was an elected federal congressman during the period that Buhari came with guns and at gunpoint sacked all of us from democracy. He murdered democracy. How can he come back to further democracy again?
Dr. Mwosu, there is one allegation that the opposition, particularly the Buhari camp, because we've spoken with them many times, they have made against your candidate, Goodluck Jonathan. They claim that Jonathan has really not protected the country. In fact, under his administration, Nigeria has become an unsafe country.
The issue about Boko Haram, first of all, is just like ISIS. It's like Al-Qaeda. This is a fundamentalist Islamic jihad. Now, tell me something. How do you hold an elected democracy to ransom because they don't overpower a jihadist movement overnight? I think that is a bogus charge. But let me tell you something. What has now happened is that Jonathan government has now been able to take his time to gather a regional and international fighting force. We now have a coalition, a military coalition.
Hold on, because people say, where has the mighty Nigerian army been? Why does a country like Chad, a little country like Niger, have to come in to make a dent with Boko Haram?
Let me tell you. On Boko Haram, Goodluck Jonathan has contained Boko Haram in the northeast. Boko Haram's original plan was to overrun the whole Nigeria. You guys are not giving Goodluck Jonathan. He has contained Boko Haram to that northeast.
That was the Honorable Ejike Mwakuo, a member of the Goodluck Jonathan Support Organization here in the United States. You also heard Dr. Okengwa Mwosu, National Coordinator of the organization. Diaspora supporters of General Muhammadu Buhari, the challenger in Saturday's Nigeria presidential election, say Nigeria under 6 years of President Goodluck Jonathan is a broken vehicle that is badly in need of repairs. Dr. Sylvester Okere is an Igbo by ethnicity and national chairman of the USA movement for the Buhari Osinbajo campaign. He says Nigerians should elect General Buhari on Saturday because he is a patriot who can once again restore Nigeria's greatness, which has been battered by Boko Haram.
Considering what Nigeria is going through, we believe that we have two candidates to choose from, and General Buhari is the best candidate to be able to get Nigeria from where it is stuck right now, because Nigeria is like a broken vehicle that requires a 911 emergency rescue. General Buhari has done it before. He's a patriot. He's very transparent. So we need someone who really loves the country to help the country get out of this shame and recklessness.
I've had a chance to talk with some supporters of President Goodluck Jonathan, and they say that General Buhari does not deserve any chance to be president because during his time as a military leader, they said he suppressed democracy.
One thing I have to let us know is that in every election, there will be followers to each candidate, and they can say whatever they want to say. But let's bring the situation of Nigeria. Where is Nigeria today compared to 6 years ago or 4 years ago? Should we continue with the same status quo? A quote says that if you fool me once, shame on you. But when you fool me twice, shame on me. So Nigerians need to open their eyes. Nigerians need to wake up. We need to go beyond tribal politics and religious politics, because if we really love the country, as patriotic as General Buhari, we know where we are and we know we are not satisfied, and we need a leader. We need a leader who will stand and defend us. Look at issues going on in Nigeria for years and so on. Where is the leader? What is the definition of commander-in-chief? We need a leader who will protect Nigeria and redeem Nigeria from the shame that we have incurred as a result of recklessness and carelessness over a nation that should be number one nation, giant of Africa, but today we are the grasshopper of Africa. Imagine Niger, Cameroon, Chad defeating Boko Haram, dealing with Boko Haram, when the so-called giant of Africa, which we are, we are then the grasshoppers of Africa.
Supporters of President Jonathan are saying that President Jonathan has been able to contain Boko Haram.
How long did it take him to rise up to decide what to do? I know President Goodluck Jonathan is not the cause of Boko Haram, but the point is that when you have a leader, why should innocent people be dying? Regardless of the cause, where Boko Haram is coming or the problem we have in the past, we need to put those things aside and save Nigeria and move the nation forward. That is the reason I'm supporting General Buhari. He has done a very credible leadership. This is a man who is transparent. This is a man who is not there to loot from the nation's resources. This is a man who is there to protect the nation. He is a patriot, and it's only patriots that can do well for any nation.
Dr. Sylvester Okere is the national chairman of the USA movement for the Buhari Osinbajo campaign. He was speaking with me in Washington. Somalia is the only country to suffer two famines in recent history. The country's farming and livestock industries are strong, but political turmoil and ongoing violence leave populations vulnerable to food insecurity. Hilary Hewler has more from Nairobi as part of VOA's Africa Food Insecurity series.
In some ways, Kasim Abdikadir is lucky. He works on farms around Afguye near Mogadishu and earns money he can use at the local market. And when he goes to that market, there's food in the stalls. But in Somalia, as in many food insecure countries, the story is never quite that simple. The price of food in the market is so expensive, says Abdikadir, that he cannot even afford to buy grains to feed his children. Somalia's last famine in 2011 killed an estimated 250,000 people, and the United Nations estimates about 3 million are still in need of some form of food aid. Somalia is certainly an arid country, and the rains do sometimes fail. But recently, the rains have been normal, and the land is capable of growing crops. In some areas, food production is even up, enough that the United Nations is considering buying grain from Somali farmers. So why is Somalia so chronically food insecure? World Food Program in Somalia head Laurent Bukera says one reason is simple logistics.
We have productive regions where some sort of harvest can take place, but the movement of some of the area where there is food to other areas where there is no food is cut off by logistical access constraints. We have still a lot in Somalia of supply roads which are cut off.
Somalia has endured more than 20 years of chaos and violence, and more recently, militants from Al-Shabaab have blocked major supply ways. Several years of military operations by the National Army and African Union forces have reopened some, but not all, of these critical routes. This continues to impact the production of food, Bukera explains, because when a country is unstable, farmers aren't always able to work.
Oftentimes have to flee. And to flee, leaving behind all their belongings, leaving behind their animals, cows, goats, which can give them milk, but also leaving behind everything they have planted.
With more than 1 million people in Somalia internally displaced, they simply don't have access to their land, he adds. And at the moment, Somalia only grows about half the food it needs. The result is a shortage of food in towns and cities, where even those with a little income cannot always afford skyrocketing food prices. Hillary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
Today's Wednesday, March 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa on yesterday assured a visiting top German official that Zimbabwe is committed to upholding the rule of law, saying this is critical if the country is to attract international investors. Erwin Chifera has details from Harare.
Addressing journalists after meeting the visiting German Foreign Office Director General for the Southern Africa and Sahel regions, George Schmidt, Mr. Chinamasa said Zimbabwe has prioritized maintaining the rule of law as the country re-engages the international community. This, he said, is important as investors want to invest in predictable and stable environments.
The rule of law is very important in any legal system. It means that things become predictable. It also means that any persons who are grieved by the system can have recourse to the law in a predictable manner. So it's a matter that is also very, very close to our heart, that as we try to woo investors to come back, they will need to come into a system where they can have recourse to the law and find remedies.
The finance minister said his discussion with Schmidt focused on the restoration of political and economic relations between the two countries and also Zimbabwe's debt to international financial institutions and other countries. Zimbabwe, which has an external debt estimated at $10 billion, owes Germany more than $700 million. Schmidt, who is in the country to attend a two-day conference on the Constitution and its implementation, said it is important for Harare to maintain and respect the rule of law, adding Germany is willing to support the country in its constitutional alignment process.
The general framework and the rule of law is one critical factor for people from the private sector to actually get involved in the Zimbabwean economy. And it's upon the good initiative of the Zimbabwean government that can regulate and actually create the conditions and the framework that Zimbabwe, the country that has a lot to offer, can actually attract foreign investment.
He adds a successful process of constitutional alignment and economic reform will have a positive impact that will no doubt improve Germany's economic relationship with Zimbabwe. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
South Sudan's lawmakers voted Tuesday to extend the tenures of President Salva Kiir, members of parliament, and state governors. But as Walker Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the vote was not completely in line with what Mr. Kiir's cabinet called for about 5 weeks ago, that the tenures of elected officials be extended by 2 years.
National Assembly spokesman Thomas Wanikundu says the extraordinary session of the legislature was well attended and more than 270 members of parliament from both houses voted in favor of extending the terms of lawmakers and President Kiir.
The tenure of the office extended is 36 months, which is 3 years.
Kundu says lawmakers also voted to extend the term of the Constitutional Review Commission. He says the terms of state legislators will be automatically extended if President Kiir signs the bill into a law. Today's vote comes 5 weeks after Information Minister Michael Makuei announced that South Sudan's national elections, which were supposed to be held at the end of June, were being postponed and the president's and National Assembly's terms were being extended by 2 years. Kundu says lawmakers voted today to put off elections and extend the tenures of elected officials for even longer for several reasons. First of all, he says, if elections are held at the end of June 2017...
That is a rainy season. As you know, the environment and the climate in South Sudan does not allow election to be conducted during the rainy season.
Kundu notes that lawmakers' tenures are supposed to end next week and President Kiir's term is supposed to end on July 8th. Kundu says the plan now is to let lawmakers stay in office until the end of December 2017, after which they will go on the campaign trail for around 2 months. He says elections would be held in March or April 2018. Kundu says delaying elections by an extra year will give South Sudan the time it needs to hold the free, fair and well-organized elections.
These 3 years are met in order to give time so that all of us get prepared and census are conducted, constituents are met, then we shall then conduct free and fair elections throughout the country.
Extending the tenures of elected officials and delaying national elections is in line with a power-sharing proposal that was signed at the end of January by President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. That proposal was brokered by regional bloc IGAD. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
An official of the rebel group loyal to former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar has condemned Tuesday's vote by South Sudanese parliament to extend President Salva Kiir's mandate by 3 years. Ezekiel Lo Gatkuov, deputy chairman for foreign affairs of the South Sudan rebel group, says the extension is a violation of the South Sudan constitution. It came on the day that the United Nations Security Council expressed profound disappointment with the failure of President Kiir and rebel leader Machar to finalize a peace deal. Gatkuov said the rebels are committed to peace, but it is the South Sudanese government that has not negotiated in good faith.
Legitimacy is given to any president by the people of that country. Salva now is very clear that his government is a legitimate government, and it is actually illegal for this parliament to extend the term of the president to 3 years. It is a violation of the Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan, and we are calling on the people of South Sudan to reject this and call the government to focus on negotiating in good faith to bring peace, and that peace will be the only body or the only tool that they can use as the people of South Sudan to legalize a government that will run that transitional government of national unity.
Let me say, a member of South Sudan's parliament says that the extension of the president's term in office is designed to give the president time to reach a peace deal with you, the rebels.
Well, you don't need to extend yourself to reach a deal. What you need to do first is to negotiate in good faith to reach a deal. Extending your term so that you can negotiate is basically extending your term so that you can negotiate longer.
So what happens to the peace process now? The recent peace process broke down. So where do we go from here?
Well, the last talk, my chairman, Dr. Riek Machar, was here in Addis and he's waiting for himself for 2 weeks to reach a deal. We have discussed 14 items, and there was no deal reached because Salva was reluctant to reach a deal. Of course, we are still looking for an agreement, and it is in the hands of Salva to make compromises so that we can have a deal. Our people are suffering. We want to have a deal that can take them out of this suffering.
I'm looking at a statement made on Tuesday in the United Nations Security Council by the South Sudan ambassador saying that President Salva Kiir is committed to the peace process, but it is you, the rebels, that continue to shift your positions by making unreasonable demands.
Well, I don't think this is true, because if we are the one obstructing peace, why would my chairman be waiting for almost 2 weeks, waiting for Salva to come to Addis so that he can negotiate in good faith? So we are actually committed to peace. The demands that we are demanding are the root causes of the problem. We are basically saying you need to transform the security forces that had carried out the massacre, the Presidential Guard of Salva Kiir. Those who committed atrocities, do you want to continue with the same army, with the same security, with the same police? No.
Ezekiel Lo Gatkuo is the deputy chairman for foreign affairs of the South Sudan Rebels, lawyer to former Vice President Riek Machar. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Defending champions Nigeria Tigers host Burkina Faso in the return leg of their men's 2015 All-Africa Games qualifiers in Lagos today, Wednesday. Fresh from their weekend triumph at the Four Nations Basketball Challenge in Johannesburg, South Africa, the Nigerian Tigers coach Sani Ahmed reckons the outing was a bonus for his inexperienced home-based players.
The organizers have done very well. The competition level is still high also. It's an experience for my team because about 11 of the players are playing in Nigeria. Most of them have not gone for international competition. So at least this is an experience for them to play outside.
You've had an All-Africa Games outing in Ouagadougou, qualifiers. You're the defending champions. And you've come for this tournament. How does it augur for your match return leg against Burkina Faso in Lagos?
I think winning this championship will give us a morale booster. And the guys will come all out. Being that we have gone through Ouagadougou and we won, so definitely we'll come all out at home and try to win.
That was Sani Ahmed, coach of the Nigerian Tigers, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. Turning to volleyball, Algerian champions GS Petrolia begin their title defense at the Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Cairo, Egypt, today, Wednesday. The winner of the tournament will represent Africa at the World Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Zurich, Switzerland, later this year. In football, draws for the 2016 Orange Africa Nations Championship CHAN qualifiers and the draw for the inaugural Africa Beach Soccer Championships in Seychelles take place in Cairo, Egypt on the 5th of April, the Confederation of African Football revealed on Tuesday. 42 teams are vying for the 15 slots to the CHAN due in Rwanda, while 8 teams will play in the Africa Beach Soccer event. Finally, Botswana hosts Lesotho in a friendly match in Lobatse as Swaziland welcomes South Africa to Lobambo today, Wednesday. Elsewhere, Nigeria hosts Uganda, Mauritius play Burundi, Gabon engage Mali, and Indonesia play Cameroon, while Rwanda's under-23 side face their South African peers in Johannesburg. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations Security Council has expressed profound disappointment with the failure of South Sudan President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to finalize a peace deal. A council statement issued on Tuesday again threatened sanctions against senior individuals whom it deems responsible for actions or policies that threaten the peace, security or stability of South Sudan. Fighting in the oil-rich East African country has killed tens of thousands and displaced more than 2 million people. And a suicide bomber rammed his car into an army checkpoint in Benghazi, Libya, on Tuesday, killing at least 7 soldiers. One report says 2 bombers may have been involved. That is it for this Wednesday, March 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Nelson, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello. I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.
Nigeria decides 2015. The final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.